I've seen that like a million times. I laugh every single time. So funny. And there's always somebody ready to give you marital advice, right? Whether it's solicited or not, always somebody wanting to kind of give you a tip or speak into what you're doing. And so to kick off the marriage series, I too am going to give you a little tip, okay, for your marriage. Has to do with Ethan Allen, the furniture store. It's now a bad word in our home. My mom and myself and Evan, who was about 18 months old at the time, we were Ethan Allen. He was climbing all over the furniture, having a good time. And we weren't necessarily looking to buy anything. Eric and I were going to be moving into a new house that had, you know, like the two living rooms, the front room, kind of formal living room. So I knew we were going to need more furniture, but this was kind of like just an exploratory, you know, thing. And but then I saw a green and white gingham checked couch, and it was so cute, and it was so expensive, and so I bought it. Now, Eric was out of town at the time, and so he gets back into town, and so we're, you know, catching up, and I'm filling him in, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm like, we were at Ethan Allen, and Evan was so cute, he was climbing all the furniture, and he's, wait, what? You were at Ethan Allen? I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, and by the way, we're having a couch delivered. Wait, what? A couch? You know, and I don't know why I didn't tell him. I mean, I'm not exactly sure because I knew that he would totally be like, yeah, that's okay, go ahead and get it, but I didn't tell him. So here's my tip. If you don't want this type of scenario, well, I may just go buy the largest screen TV there is because you just bought a couch without asking. If you don't want that hanging over your head for about 20 years, I'm just saying, maybe, you know, early on, okay, you decide, like, if it's over a couple $100s, you know, we're going to at least text a picture, you know, something. So that's my marriage tip as we start our series on marriage, This Is Us, and excited to be kicking off the series. Have not watched one episode, okay? I'm just going to tell you right now, I do not have the emotional bandwidth for that show. Because if you've talked, and we all have, talked to people, right, who've watched this show, I work with some girls, and this is honest to Pete, this is what they say the day after the show's aired. You don't watch it? Oh my gosh, I was wrecked for days. It is so good. You know, I cried my eyes out. You have to watch it. You know, and so I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll binge watch it over the summer, but I'm not quite sure I'm there right now. But what we know about the series and what it shows us is relationships are hard, right? And especially when it comes to marriage. Many times we're left with a whole lot more questions than we get answers. And unless we understand God's design and intent for marriage, I mean, let's face it, we kind of make it up as we go, right? So whether you are married or you are unmarried or recently divorced or single, old or young, okay, whether you're in love, you're not in love, you're hoping for love, and you're looking for love in all the wrong places, okay, wherever you're at, what we're going to be talking about over the next 4 weeks, we're focusing on marriage, but these are about healthy relationships, and these are principles that we can apply to just about every single relationship we have. So we hope that you come back every week as we build on this, and today we're going to start with this idea of outside influences. Because we know, right, we have got to be good at discerning the good from the bad influences in our life. We talked about this with the Big Faith series a little bit ago, about how important it is that you surround yourself with people who are like-minded, right, who are going to build up your faith and not tear it down. Because we are people of influence, you know, we are highly influenced. And if you're married, okay, your marriage is influenced by all the people around you, your family, your friends, your acquaintances, your coworkers, your neighbors, right? Culture. I mean, that's just the way we are. And so these are all the people in the background of your life, and they want to speak into what you're doing. And so you have to ask yourself, right? Are they bringing value to my relationship? Are they helping me be the best part of my us? Are they offering clarity and support? because that's what we're going to be going after this morning. And so if you're married, here's the question for you and your spouse, okay? You're going to need to get clear on who your backup singers are. Because God designed marriage to be a duet. It's two people, right? It's a man and a woman. It is not a chorus. It is not an ensemble. And when you think of married duets, you might be thinking of some of these people, right? Some of these people might pop into your, you know I do, right? Captain and Tennille. But these are not the best examples. We won't be looking to them. I mean, I think Faith and I think they might be the only ones left married. So at any rate, we are going to look at another duet. It is the ultimate duet. It is the best duet, and it's in the Bible. It's in the Song of Solomon, and it's this lyrical back and forth between two lovers, and it chronicles their relationship, you know, from the time that they meet to the dating, the engagement, the courtship, the marriage, and a little bit beyond. And what we also see in this duet, in this back and forth, there are a couple of outside influences that participate in this duet. And so to kind of give us an overview of the book, okay, Song of Solomon, what it's about and who the characters are that are in it, okay, take a look at the screens.
Today we are looking at the book of Song of Solomon. It is the steamiest book in the Bible. There's so many different interpretations of this book. I am going to take the historical, traditional approach, and we're going to look at who are the main characters, the main players of the book, and then also how does this plot unfold. And so first we have the Shulamite woman. This is a poor country peasant woman. She is the star of the show. She does most of the talking, and most of the book is centered around her. Next, we have the male lover. Some people think it's Solomon, other people think it's someone else. Either way, he is portrayed as a wealthy king who's going to sweep this poor, insecure, peasant country woman off of her feet. Next, you have this third group called the Daughters of Jerusalem, and these are like the woman's groupies. They're young women, inexperienced in matters of love, and they're kind of living their life vicariously through this woman who is in love, getting ready to be married. Finally, you have the brothers of this woman, and they seem to serve as her protection or her covering, and they seem resolute to ensure that this young lady stays sexually pure until marriage. Okay, so the plot has three movements to it. First, it's the courtship, then it's the wedding night, and then it is the marriage. So the book starts out steamy from the beginning because you have this woman who is expressing her strong desire to be kissed and held by her man, and she even highlights how much she loves how he smells. She even compares his love to wine, insinuating that she is in love, she is intoxicated by this man. However, she has an insecurity because she's been working out in the field, and as a result, her skin has been scorched, she is dark, which is an indication to everybody that she is a poor young lady. And as a result, she says that I've been so busy working out in the fields, taking care of everything on the outside, that I have not had the opportunity to take care of my own appearance. And so next we move to the wedding phase. And so before they consummate their marriage, you have this man who is describing in vivid detail his wife's body from head to toe. And so as a response, this woman now invites her now husband to completely and totally explore her body. And it is here that you have some of the most descriptive, most erotic language, not only in the Bible, but in all of Hebrew literature. As a matter of fact, it was feared that this book was so erotic that it would actually encourage some people to lust while reading it. But the purpose is to illustrate and celebrate the sexual relationship between a husband and a wife in a God-honoring marriage. And so next we move to the third and final phase of this book, which is the marriage. And so just like every couple has disagreements, this couple's first argument centers around, you guessed it, sex. So the story goes down like this. This dude comes home one night, he's excited, and he makes it known to his wife that he wants to be intimate with her. She comes up with some excuse and says, hey, it's too late, I've gotten ready for bed, I've already put my clothes on, it's inconvenient for me to meet your needs. This dude gets upset, he leaves the house. Later on, she feels guilty for turning him away, and then she goes and chases after him, and then the two come together again and reunite and reaffirm their commitment to one another. The book ends in chapter 8 with some of the most beautiful language in all of Hebrew poetry, where the couple expresses their exclusive commitment to one another by saying, many waters or troubles cannot quench or extinguish or put out this type of love because our love is as strong as death.
Okay. Yeah. I know some of you are panicking because you're thinking, oh, dear Lord Jesus, please tell me she's not going to be talking about sex this morning. Because anytime anybody references Song of Solomon in church, right, it's usually going to be followed up by a sex talk. So, which is so interesting to me because here's the thing, right? If there's any place we should be talking about sex and God's design for it, it is in the church. Because he created it. It is his thing after all. Right? The world has taken it and corrupted it, but God created it. It wasn't like Adam and Eve just discovered this all on their own. You know, they're all like, well, wow, that works. You know, and God was like totally caught unaware. Like, well, would you look? I didn't even know they could do that. Yeah, no. Sex is God's thing. You could take a deep cleansing breath. I'm not going to be talking about that. We're going to go back to this idea of marriage being a duet, and how we have to protect the integrity of the duet by choosing good backup singers. Because every marriage is unique. Every marriage has its own sound and its own song. When you get married, you have lyrics, right? Your spouse brings lyrics, and then together you create over time a song, just a beautiful and unique sound. Eric said to me, do you want me to come up and we can sing a duet? No. I was like, yeah, no. I'm like, this is why we talk, babe. We don't sing. We have none of those giftings. Plus, we don't want to scar our children. So no duets between the two of us. But if you're married, you and your spouse are a duet, and there are all sorts of additional voices in the background, and they want to be a backup singer, right? They want to participate. So here's what we're going after today. If you are married, you and your spouse need to get clear, right, on who your backup singers are. Who are you going to allow to speak and influence your duet? And if you are single, let me just, you know, stop for a second and address this. If you are single, marriage is not the end destination, okay? You are not on this planet so you can get married, right? That is not the goal. In fact, the Apostle Paul, when he's writing a letter to the church in Corinth, he says, and this is his opinion, he says, I do, though, tell the unmarried and widows that singleness might well be the best thing for them as it has been for me. Because there's pros and cons to both, right? But I think in the church, and I don't think it's intentional, but I think somehow we have sent the message to people who aren't married that they are somehow unfinished business. And so don't buy the lie for a second that says your value and your worth are found in who you're married to, right? For every single one of us, our value and our worth and our identity are found in Christ, not marriage. Because God's will for your life, his plan for your life, it unfolds daily. It's not like God's plan begins at the marriage altar. I think for all of us, it's just so important to remember that God's will for your life, his plan, is to know him and to make him known, regardless of your marital status. How that looks for each of us, those are just details. So whether you're a solo artist or you are in a duet with your spouse, this idea of being intentional of who we allow to speak into our life is really a boundary principle. And it's important for any healthy relationship. And so in the Song of Solomon, the daughters of Jerusalem are some of those backup singers. And the very first time that we hear from them in the book, they are actually very supportive of the Shulamite woman and her new relationship. They say, we rejoice and delight in you. We will praise your love more than wine. You know, and so they, here's the translation, they're happy, right? They are so psyched for her. I mean, these are her friends. They probably did all that, oh, cute and handsome. Has he kissed you yet? You know, they probably did all of that girly stuff. But the important thing is that they were supportive of her relationship. And those are the kind of backup singers that you want in your life. You want somebody who's going to be supportive and encourage your marriage. Because a good backup singer seeks and provides harmony. Right? The goal of a backup singer is to bring harmony to something, to make it sound even more pleasing than what it is. I mean, if you were a legit backup singer, right, and every time you went to sing, you tried to steal the show, right, you would not be a backup singer very long. Or every time you went to sing, you know, you ruined the integrity or the sound of the song, or you sang in such a way that you were just making everybody else go off key, right? You would not be a backup singer for very long. And yet, we allow people to remain in the background of our lives, and they're not bringing harmony to what we're doing, right? Eric and I knew each other for about 10 years before we were married. It's quite the saga. We were friends for 2 years because he was already dating somebody when I met him. And so I had to buy my time. So I dated all his friends. So we were friends for 2 years. We dated for 2 years. We broke up and we were apart for 4 years. Got back together, engaged, married, and here we are. And I have a good girlfriend. We've been friends since kindergarten and still friends. And I can remember her saying when I told her, oh, Eric and I are, you know, engaged. And she was, like, not supportive. I mean, she was very skeptical that this was going to work. Because in her mind, well, over the 4 years, there was still a little contact every now and then. You know, one of us would send a birthday card or, you know, one of us would call out of the blue. Or I might be having dinner with his mother, you know, just to stay in the loop, you know. And so there was always a little bit of contact. And so I think in her mind, she was like, well, what she said was, she's like, well, Julie, relationships where you break up and get back together and break up and get back together and break, you know, those don't work out. And, you know, I think you're just settling. And so it was interesting, everything she was like, you know, thrown at me, and I tried to explain to her, because Eric and I were Jesus followers, and so I was trying to explain to her, I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm like, we've totally seen God at work in our lives. You know, this is how it was supposed to play out. We know, I mean, you know, Eric grew spiritually, I grew spiritually. We both accomplished things in our careers that had we gotten married, never would have happened. You know, so I'm like, this is all good. And she wasn't buying any of it because I used to think she was more agnostic, but really I think she's what they call an omnist, and that is somebody who recognizes and respects all religions. Doesn't believe there's any one way to get to heaven, right? It's all good. And so she could not be really supportive because she had no clue what Eric and I were going after. And so there could be voices, like I had to turn her mic down. And there could be voices right now speaking into your marriage that are doing the same thing. Maybe you have people in your life, friends that you've been friends with for a long time. Maybe they're just always wanting to go out after work or on the weekends, and that's creating a little bit of strife because you feel like they're making you choose between maybe their friendship and your marriage, and, you know, that's not good because it's creating a lot of friction. You know, maybe you have coworkers that, you know, they're just always trash-talking marriage. They just never have anything good to say. You know, and whether we know it or not, right, if you are around that and that's all you hear, maybe that's kind of influenced your thinking a little bit. Maybe what you think about marriage, and maybe they're right and they have some good points, and maybe it's kind of influenced the way that you're interacting with your spouse and engaging with your spouse. So make sure that your backup singers are bringing harmony to your duet. Okay, second characteristic of a great backup singer, they are going to advocate for the song, which is the marriage, okay, not just for you. So in chapter 5 of the Song of Solomon, right, they are now married, they've just gotten back from the Jerusalem Hilton, they had a fabulous time. Read the book, they had a really good time. And so now they're having their first kind of spat, right, that was in the video. He wants to mm-mm, and she's like, mm-mm. And so he leaves, she goes to find him, she feels bad. I mean, how many of us can relate to this that are married, right? And so she goes to look for him, and she runs into some of her girlfriends, the daughters of Jerusalem, when she's looking, and they're like, what's going on? And she tells them about the little fight. Here's their response to her. Which way did your beloved turn that we may look for him with you? Okay, this is really important because these are her friends. They didn't respond with, oh, girl, just let him go. He's a jerk. You don't need to take that. You're tired. I'm telling you, I told you marriage would stink. You deserve better. Several years ago, Eric and I had a couple in our small group, and they just had a really neat, neat testimony. Part of their song, part of their journey was that they got married relatively young, had, you know, issues right away, as a lot of us do, right? Got divorced, and then got remarried. And as they were telling the story, the two things that they attribute to, now, not that this caused the divorce, okay, but the two things that they attribute to the fact that it's like they were on the superhighway towards divorce was that they had no support, a lack of support, and negative outside influences. I remember her saying, Julie, I literally did not have one person encouraging me to stay married. I had nobody, like, offering help. You know, she would say when she'd complain and gripe to her girlfriends, they were all like pitching in and, oh yeah, it's horrible, and you know. And so it just made divorce that much easier. You know, she didn't have anybody that was fighting for her us. Now the Shulamite woman, right, when she has an issue, first little fight with her husband, and she tells her friends, their immediate reaction is to help. And that's because they are protecting and supporting the marriage. They're protecting and supporting the us, not just her, not just their friend. So if you want to protect your us, you need others who are going to protect your us when you don't want to, right? Because, I mean, the griping is real, the complaining is real, right? But we need people in our life that will help course correct us, that are going to say that we'll listen, but that will then say, you know what? Let's see this from both point of view. Let me offer some hope and encouragement. Right? Maybe that's another married couple, somebody that you really admire, that's going to help protect your us. Maybe it's finding a really good, unbiased counselor. Right? A counselor that's going to fight for your us. Not for him, not for her, not to take sides, but somebody who's going to bring the two of you and wrestle through this all together. You know, maybe it's finding a single person. You have a single friend, and they have a really great gift of being able to look in and see things that you don't see, and they're going to in turn support your us. They can make great protectors of your us. Because good backup singers do that. They are going to support your marriage, not just you. This is really hard for parents. Okay? I feel like this needs to be said because you hear this a lot with marital strife many times, right? It's the background supporting players, if you will. Moms and dads, when your baby girl, when your baby boy, when they call home and they start complaining about their spouse or about an argument or about the way things are going, that would be a really great time for you to advocate for their us, right? Of course, you can still support your child and listen to them, but protect their us when they don't necessarily want to or they're not strong enough to. Because in Genesis 2:24, this is what God's design is for marriage. It says, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. It's the leave and cleave principle, right? It's this idea that when a man and a woman get married, okay, and begin their life together, it is now this new living, breathing organism that takes on its own life, and it's spiritual, and God's blessed it. And it needs to be your top priority. If you want your us, if you want to protect your us, and you want to put yourself in a position for you to have the most success in your marriage, then each spouse needs to make the other their number one priority. It's the only way it's going to work. Men, your wife takes precedence over your mother. Ladies, your husband takes precedence over your mother. And if you notice, I said mother both times, because really? I mean, let's be honest, right, women? I mean, you don't hear, if we don't go to Christmas at my dad's house, he's going to guilt trip me forever. Right? Or, no, you don't understand. It's always been this way. My dad is expecting us. Yeah. And you know what? It is what it is. I mean, we're women. We're highly relational. We're driven that way. We're mama bears. We're protectors. We love our kids. It's hard to let go. But sometimes moms of married kids can sometimes bring a cleaver to the leave and cleave principle. And so we need to just be very careful about that. There are backup singers, right? Sometimes the backup singers come with the song. That's the family and that's the in-laws, right? But you as a couple, right? You can decide, are we going to let somebody hijack our song? Right? Are we going to let somebody, you know, speak into our song in such a way that we're constantly off key with each other? You can make that decision. And that applies to all of us, right? Any healthy relationship. Who are we allowing to speak into our life? Ask yourself, these are some really good questions to ask yourself when you're evaluating, okay? Does this person encourage me to be a better person? Does this person build me up or tear me down? How do I feel after I've been with this person or around this person? Does this person help me to be a better friend, a better spouse, a better Jesus follower? Because if the answer to any of those questions is even slightly negative, right, then there might need to be some fine-tuning of the microphones in order to protect your us, right? You might need to turn some of those voices down by setting boundaries. Maybe you limit the amount of time that you're with them, you know? Or maybe you guard your heart a little bit more and you're going to limit, you know, what you share and maybe how much you share with certain people. And there could be some backup singers that need to be on mute completely, you know, just completely cut out. And that is really hard when it is family, because that's just not normal or natural to us, right? But if you want your us to be protected and to be your number one priority, the people that speak into your life right now are going to determine where you end up. In Louis Giglio's book, Goliath Must Fall, which is about conquering all those big and scary things in our way, this is what he says. He says, we don't end up where we hope to end up. Our lives ultimately end up wherever our path is headed right now. So we have to be diligent about who and what we align ourselves with, because whatever or whomever we saddle up with is going to determine where we arrive months and years from now. See, God designed marriage to be a duet. You have lyrics, your spouse has lyrics, and your backup singers are needed, but they need to be providing harmony and support. So over the next few weeks, okay, as we continue in the marriage series, this is a really important foundational step, because it's going to be hard if work needs to be done, right? It's going to be hard to grow or move into something new if all you're hearing is negativity, right? It's hard to kind of change the trajectory of something if you're not, you know, hearing anything positive and all you're hearing is negativity. And especially with marriage, because when we try to change, if there's work to be done in our marriages, right, so many times we say, well, if I could just go back, right, back to that sweet spot, back to before the betrayal, back to before the lies, before the kids, before life got too busy and crazy. You know, we always are thinking, let's go back to something. And God is like, let's go forward, right? Let me do a new thing. Let me lead. Because God is not a God of bringing us back. Because God wants us to trust him with our future and with each step that we take every day. So we're going to have just a short reflection time. So during the song, take a moment, allow God to begin that inventory evaluation of backup singers in your life. You know, who's bringing harmony to what you're doing? You know, who is maybe causing your duet to go off key? You know, allow God to begin to show you a first step towards a better marriage and towards a healthier relationship. Well, maybe, hopefully, God was beginning to reveal to you some of the microphones that need to be turned up or turned down. And if you can take out your connection card, on the back we have what we call next steps. At Crosspoint, we like to take what we hear and put it into action. And so for you this week, there might be an action step needed. You know, if you're married, it might be having that conversation, right? Because really, I'm not sure I've ever had that conversation, this idea of who are our backup singers. But it's an important conversation, right? To be on the same page of who are the people speaking into our duet? You know, who do we think we need to turn down? Who do we need to turn up? You know, maybe it's also adding some better backup singers to what you're doing and into your life and into your relationships. You know, that idea earlier of maybe seeking out another married couple that is going to fight for your us, or that single friend, or the unbiased counselor. Here's the thing. If anybody wants you to have a healthy, joyful life with good relationships, it's God, right? God is all about restoring relationships. That's what he did, right? Between us and him. It's kind of his jam. He kind of knows relationships inside and out. So we can ask him to be our number one backup singer. And whatever relationship struggles that we're dealing with, whether it's in our marriage or if it's just another relationship that we have going on in our life, we need to allow him to speak into it. Because he's all about restoring. He's all about renewing. And here's the thing with marriages, okay? It may not be about trying to save your marriage. Because the reality is, not every marriage can be saved. Not every marriage should be saved based on circumstances, participants, willingness of participants, right? But it's about hope. It's always, always about hope. God always has something better for you. Hope is alive regardless of your marital status. And kind of like I mentioned earlier with singles, right? That God's plan for your life doesn't begin at the marriage altar. Okay, well, if you are recently divorced or you have divorce in your background, God's plan for your life didn't end because you signed divorce papers. God still loves you. God still has a plan for your life. God still wants to use you, and by using you, it means he wants to be Jesus through you to touch other people. So this is really about hope and knowing that God always has something better ahead. Yes, he can restore. Yes, he can renew. But regardless of what that looks like and how that shakes down, he is always for you. Father, I just thank you that we can count on you. Help us to trust you. Help us to look to you as our number one backup singer. Lord, we're so thankful that you redeem, you renew, that God, you have a way of taking our broken lives, our failed relationships, our broken relationships, our past mistakes, our hurts, all of that, God, and you cover it with your amazing grace. And you say, let's go forward. Every day, Lord, your mercies are new. God, breathe joy and hope into our lives. Help us to lean into you for our future, Lord. And we just thank you and thank you, Lord, for the gift of your amazing grace.